This morning, America's First News starts right after this. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Ignoring the warnings. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Friday, August 20th, glad you could be with us. And here's what we have for you this hour.
A new report says Biden administration officials were told last month about the potential collapse of the Afghan army and were urged to begin evacuation soon.
On the COVID front, the Texas Supreme Court says schools can continue requiring masks during a legal battle while Alabama is out of ICU beds.
The Caldor fire in Northern California is spreading without containment. Meanwhile, some 23,000 people are under evacuation orders in the area.
And schools failing to identify which students missed class during COVID.
Before the pandemic, there were a lot of factors at play. It might have been lack of transportation. It might have been an unstable household. But with the pandemic, those factors, continue to be at play. But there are also a bunch of other layers that entered the picture.
Aaliyah Wong at USA Today on the lack of data about students that weren't logging on to virtual classes during lockdowns. More questions for the Biden administration. An internal State Department memo last month warned top agency officials of the potential collapse of Kabul soon after the U.S. established an August 31st deadline for troop withdrawal in Afghanistan. The Wall Street Journal says the cable warned of rapid territorial gains by the Taliban and offered recommendations on ways to mitigate the crisis and speed up an evacuation. For example, it urged evacuation flights for those with special immigrant visas to start no later than August 1st. Pennsylvania Democratic Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan.
I really struggle to understand how we are here. I really struggle to understand the math of how we will get everybody out within the timeframes that are being given.
The existence of the confidential State Department cable adds to an expanding debate about what U.S. officials understood about Afghanistan's stability. You'll recall last month that President Biden had said that a collapse of the government and a Taliban takeover were, quote, highly unlikely. The Texas Supreme Court has ruled that schools will be allowed to continue requiring masks while a legal battle between the governor and local officials gets sorted out. The move came yesterday just as the Texas Education Agency suspended enforcement in the state's public school systems of Governor Greg Abbott's ban on mask requirements. In Georgia, Governor Brian Kemp has signed an executive order liberating businesses from local COVID-19 ordinances. He's also being pressured to prohibit school rules that compel the use of masks.
I think letting the schools deal with that individual situation that they have is better than a one-size-fits-all, overarching policy from the state or the federal government, I might add.
Elsewhere, hospitals in Alabama have run out of intensive care unit beds as coronavirus cases spike across the state. Hospital staffers have been forced to convert hallways, regular patient rooms, and emergency spaces into areas where they can treat patients in need of ICU rooms. Alabama, by the way, has a 35% vaccination rate. Some tense moments in Washington, D.C. A man surrendered to law enforcement yesterday about 5 hours after he drove a black pickup truck onto a sidewalk next to the Library of Congress and told police he had a bomb. The scare drew a massive law enforcement response and prompted the evacuations of nearby offices and homes. Police spent hours negotiating with the man, who pulled up to the building holding what an officer believed to be a detonator. Investigators found what police described as possible bomb-making materials, but no explosives. Capitol Police Chief Thomas Manger.
I believe his mother recently passed away, and we spoke with members of his family, and there were other issues that he was dealing with.
The man communicated with officers by holding up handwritten signs through his front driver's side window before surrendering. He was identified as 49-year-old Floyd Roseberry of Grover, North Carolina. Police said he had no serious criminal history out of that state. Coming up next, how can the U.S. help Afghans while keeping taxpayer dollars out of Taliban hands?
is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes. Whoa! And in order to maneuver it, you need an expert by your side. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech solutions you need to help you get out in front and stay ahead of the game. Woo! Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices in Windows 10 Pro.
Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Friday. The diplomatic crisis facing President Biden after the Taliban seized Afghanistan includes tough calls about continuing humanitarian aid to the country, which ranks as one of the poorest nations in the world. Here to explain is Jeff Mordock, White House reporter at The Washington Times. Jeff, set this up.
The Biden administration's really facing a problem here when it comes to providing humanitarian aid to Afghanistan. On one hand, the administration doesn't want to start cutting taxpayer-funded checks to the Taliban, given, you know, how brutal the regime is likely to be and was. On the other hand, if you withhold this aid, you're going to already worsen a full-scale humanitarian crisis, because even before the Taliban took over, there were a lot of concerns in Afghanistan, everything from displacement, drought, COVID-19 infections on the rise, and that's what all this money went to. So you've really got, it's really going to be a thorny situation for the Biden administration and other aid organizations on how to navigate this.
Yeah. So is there any way to guarantee that the money gets into the right hands?
There isn't. The best thing the administration can do would be, if it wants to continue providing aid to Afghanistan, would be to use sort of nonprofit, non-government organizations that won't go through the government, Afghan's government. But even that is problematic because, you know, the Taliban's going to control the roads. We've already seen them set up checkpoints. They imposed very strict rules back when they used to run Afghanistan on who can receive the money. For example, they barred women aid workers. So every situation poses its own challenges and own threats. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens here. We're already seeing a lot of European nations pull aid, saying they're not going to start giving humanitarian aid to a Taliban-led country.
We're speaking with Jeff Mordock, White House reporter at The Washington Times, about his story entitled "Biden Snared in a Diplomatic Dilemma Over Afghanistan's Humanitarian Crisis." All right, so how does Europe justify it? Because as you point out in the story, I think 80% of the Afghanistan budget comes from foreign aid. I'm sure Europe doesn't want to see the money go into the wrong hands, but wants to avoid an ongoing or worsening humanitarian crisis. What do they say?
Exactly. Right now, they've put a halt to it, and I guess they put a halt to their aid. Germany, which was going to donate about $300 million to Afghanistan, they've halted their aid. The European Union, which pledged $1.4 billion in assistance between 2024, they've announced they're going to suspend aid payments. Even the International Monetary Fund, which lends money, they were supposed to make a payment to Afghanistan next week, a $460 million loan. They've halted that. What's really interesting is there's only one country that is not halting it, and that's the United Kingdom. And they're even saying, we're so concerned about Afghanistan, not only are we not going to stop humanitarian aid, we're going to increase it by as much as 10%.
Oh, wow. Did you say in your story, too, at one point we had targeted $500 million, and now it's down to $266?
That's correct. The United States had allocated roughly $500 million to spend on humanitarian aid in Afghanistan. And so far this year, we've paid out $266 million. It's not clear what's going to happen with the rest of that money. President Biden said this week that he is going to continue aid to Afghanistan. But what I'm hearing from administration officials and even people in the State Department is there are significant challenges to distributing that aid, and they're really not sure how logistically this is going to work, if this is even going to be something that's possible. And a great example of that is the UN World Food Program said this week that there's 500 tons of food and medicine stuck at the Afghan border that the Taliban has seized and is holding on to.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Jeff Mordock, White House reporter at The Washington Times. 19 minutes after the hour on this morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Southern states are assessing the damage from severe flooding from Tropical Storm Fred, which left 2 dead and 17 missing in North Carolina. Western North Carolina saw intense flooding with nearly 100 people rescued. Remnants of Fred brought up to 5 inches of rain across parts of New York and New England yesterday.
Number two.
With a highly contagious Delta variant spreading across the U.S., children are filling hospital intensive care beds instead of classrooms in record numbers. Many are too young to get the vaccine, which is available only to those 12 and over. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves.
In the last month, 89% of our hospitalizations and 87% of our deaths have occurred amongst the unvaccinated.
The surging virus is causing turmoil and infighting among parents, administrators, and politicians around the country, especially in states like Florida and Texas, where Republican governors have barred schools for making youngsters wear masks.
Number three.
The U.S. is struggling to pick up the pace of American and Afghan evacuations at Kabul Airport, constrained by obstacles ranging from armed Taliban checkpoints to paperwork problems. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby.
We believe that we will soon begin to see an opening up of the aperture, and we're hopeful that that means a more consistent increase in the flow.
With an August 31st deadline looming, tens of thousands remain to be airlifted out. A North Carolina man who claimed to have a bomb in a pickup truck near the U.S. Capitol surrendered to law enforcement after an hours-long standoff that prompted a massive police response and the evacuations of government buildings in the area. Authorities were investigating what led the suspect, identified as 49-year-old Floyd Roseberry, to drive onto the sidewalk outside the Library of Congress, make bomb threats to officers, and profess a litany of anti-government grievances as part of a bizarre episode that he live-streamed for a Facebook audience. Flyers are getting more out of control and fines are soaring. The FAA has levied more than $1 million in fines so far this year against unruly passengers. Fines range from $7,500 against a passenger who allegedly threatened to kill someone seated near him and $45,000 against a passenger who allegedly threw objects, including his carry-on luggage, at other passengers. The FAA has received nearly 3,900 reports of unruly behavior since January 1st.
They seem like fun people.
Yes, right?
You do hold your breath on flights sometimes these days, I feel like.
You can't get away.
Thank you, Jen. Apply for a loan with a bank and you might get free coffee. But Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers personal loans with no fees, ever. So consolidate debt with a no-fee personal loan from Marcus by Goldman Sachs or get free coffee. Go to marcus.com to learn more about our no-fee personal loans and other products today. Lending and deposits provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Thanks for joining us. If you're a parent of a teen or tween, you're probably well aware of the craze around the toy called Poppets. They've exploded in popularity over the past year, driven by a combination of pandemic stress and viral TikTok videos. Clips of Poppets are proliferating across the platform with hashtag fidget toys, driving 12.5 billion views as of the middle of August. More from Haley Velasco, social media editor at The Wall Street Journal. Haley, what are Poppets?
Poppets are these toys that basically mimic bubble wrap. So they're silicone in all different shapes and colors, basically hand size, and you pop it back and forth either by yourself or with friends, and you play a game.
How popular have these things gotten?
These things are crazy. I mean, you know, in the last year over the pandemic, we're now seeing millions and millions of these being sold. The interesting thing about them, too, is that their price point is pretty affordable for most, 99 cents to up to 30 bucks. You know, kids are just loving them.
These came about originally as kind of therapy items, correct?
Yes. Therapists have been using these in their therapy for, oh gosh, decades. They to use eye hand to work with kids mostly, but adults too, all in a myriad of different things: stress, anxiety, mental health, really just to focus and isolate certain, you know, fingers or fine motor movements.
I was just going to say, what actually is therapeutic about it for those who it works for? It's a sensory thing. Is it the sound of it? Is it the sight? Is it being able to do it over and over again?
So the therapist that I talked to, it's kind of two things. The first is focusing on a continuous movement that's the same. So that's the stress and anxiety piece of it. So, you know, you take it out of your pocket or your bag, your backpack, and you're focused on doing the same continuous movement over and over again. So there's a calming effect to that. But on the building side of things, they also use it if you're building, you're working with your hands, your fine motor skills to really develop that as well. So it seems to be used in two different ways.
Oh, wow. Me. We're speaking with Haley Velasco, social media editor at The Wall Street Journal. Her story is called How Poppets, the TikTok Sensation, Became the Toy of the Pandemic. And this has turned into almost a side story here with people who hunt for these types of things.
Right. Definitely. They're out there at the toy stores. You know, I reported this story from my local toy store. I was there buying gifts, looking around, and all of a sudden they were like, you guys need to know about this trend. And when I tell you, there were kids running displays, it was crazy. Parents driving from all over. Just everybody wants Poppets.
And somebody said your story, like, this is an interesting one because it's been lasting. Right. It's got some staying power.
It definitely has. And I think what's really interesting to me, you know, toy experts are so smart in this space. And I said to them, you know, will this trend fizzle out? Are we going to see it in the holidays? Are we going to see it in the spring? And they said, we've never seen something with such staying power as these Poppets because of the variety in the industry, but also because you can have so many and kids want more and more. So they say holidays, you're going to see them. And then they say the spring too. They're going to be different versions, and everybody's going to still be wanting them.
So is this the next iteration of the fidget spinners?
That's exactly right. Fidget spinners, a couple years ago, 2017, that they were really popular. And I think the staying power of this time with fidget toys is that there's so many more types.
All right. Thanks, Haley. Haley Velasco, social media editor at The Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon.
Cutting through the clutter to bring you the people and stories that matter to you. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday, August 20th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. President Biden speaks today about the Afghanistan evacuation. Confidential cable last month warned the Biden administration to start evacuations before August 1st. Education Department wiping out nearly $6 billion in student loans for disabled borrowers. Amazon reportedly plans to open several retail stores. Gamers excited for today's release of Madden NFL 22 and how a former flight attendant is honoring airline crews on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Sometimes it feels like your business is going 100 miles an hour, barely keeping up. Dell Technologies advisors have the tech you need to help you get past whatever's in front of you. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. A year and a half after the coronavirus first swept the nation, few of America's largest school districts can provide a clear picture of which students missed big chunks of class time, raising questions about whether schools are ready for the challenge of catching students up and preparing them for adulthood. Aaliyah Wong, who covers inequities in education for USA Today, says the data is critical since children who are chronically absent, meaning they miss at least 10% of a given school year, are at risk of eventually dropping out. Aaliyah, what have you uncovered?
Few districts throughout the pandemic really tracked attendance in a reliable and accurate way. In fact, just three of the districts were able to provide disaggregated data on absences, which says a lot about the quality of data collection during the pandemic, but it also says a lot about their ability to really recover learning losses next year. If they don't, or this current school year, if they don't know who was missing, how are they going to have any hope of catching students up?
Sure. Weren't they supposed to keep this data, though?
Correct. So under federal law, all states are required to include detailed chronic absenteeism data in their annual report cards. And chronic absenteeism refers to students who miss at least 10% of the school year. So in a typical school year, a student who's absent for at least 15 days would be considered chronically absent. And, you know, in recent years, there's been a lot of attention on this because chronic absenteeism is a very key predictor of a student's success. If a student is chronically absent at any point between the 8th grade and 12th grade, they are 7 times more likely to drop out than their peers with better attendance.
Goodness. Why do some of these students miss so much school, that 15 days minimum, for example, in a school year?
Right. So before the pandemic, there were a lot of factors at play. It might have been lack of transportation. It might have been an unstable household. It might have been, you know, a bad relationship with school. Perhaps they were being unfairly disciplined. Perhaps they were being bullied. Perhaps they just didn't feel like the learning material is relevant to, you know, their interests. But with the pandemic, those factors, continued to be at play. But there were also a bunch of other layers that entered the picture. We know that tons of students couldn't get online or lacked a device to get online. We know that tons of students ended up having to take on jobs to help their parents or households get by. Some people had to take care of sick relatives. A lot of students were frankly grieving. The pandemic disproportionately affected communities of color. And so in particularly in those communities, we were seeing a lot of grief. And so the issues really compounded and really hindered children's ability to engage with school.
This is alarmingly disappointing. What will schools do? I mean, if they don't have the data or won't share it, ideally, I guess they'd be reaching out to these students and saying, hey, let's get you caught up, but they can't do that. And so, I don't know, these kids are going to fall farther behind, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fear. And there is some hope in that there are a bunch of efforts to really track down these students to recuperate some of the data that went missing over the pandemic, and to really target supports at students who disengage from school at greater levels than their more privileged peers. But it is a very concerning picture. I mean, it's really hard to solve a problem if you don't know exactly what the problem is.
That seemed like, I mean, getting away from the most important issue, I guess, here, but it seemed like schools had all kinds of excuses for not getting you the data.
Yeah, they're, and many of the excuses, I will say, are valid. I mean, collecting data during the pandemic, whatever kind of data, was really difficult. And measuring attendance, whereas, you know, pre-COVID, it was pretty simple. If a student was in class, you called their name, they said here, they were marked as present. That's pretty straightforward. With the pandemic, and especially in the early stages when everyone was learning remotely, I mean, what counted as attendance? That was really tricky. And schools also wanted to be fair. I mean, some students couldn't learn during, you know, the traditional school hours because they were working or caring for relatives, so they had to do their schoolwork at night. And maybe, you know, the schools maybe loosened their criteria for what counted as attendance to be more inclusive of students with those extra responsibilities or needs.
Thanks, Aaliyah. Aaliyah Wong, who covers inequities in education for USA Today. Coming up next, college athletes who luck into endorsement deals. Staying sharp is how businesses stay successful. But the guys at Harry's, they took it literally. Their business stays sharp because their products do. In a recent study, Harry's customers said their eighth shave was as smooth as their first. Redeem a Harry's trial set when you go to harrys.com/deal and see if you agree. They craft their blades in their own German factory to make sure they meet their high standards. They're so confident in them, they offer a 100% money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And the bottom line is, you get a great shave and end up looking pretty sharp as a result. Harry's is giving their best offer to our listeners. New Harry's customers can redeem a starter set for just $3 at harrys.com/deal. You'll get a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover to protect your blades when you're on the go. That's a $13 value for just $3. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Visit harrys.com/deal to try Harry's today.
Today's Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Friday. It is time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, you may have heard that there have been some big changes in the way college athletes can make money, now able to capitalize on their name, image, and likeness by signing deals with companies and local businesses. A lot of them are just popular players endorsing athletic wear or local eateries, but some are such perfect fits that it was inevitable that they get together. For example, Alabama has a freshman defensive back named Gaquincy McKinstry. His nickname, Kool-Aid. In fact, he's even listed as Kool-Aid McKinstry on Alabama's roster. So guess who came knocking when players were officially allowed to start signing NIL deals on July 1st? That's right, Kool-Aid announced on Twitter this week that they were signing McKinstry, who then responded by wondering whether the deal means that he gets to shout, "Oh yeah," whenever he walks into a room. The perfect marriage of name and licensing deal even got some thinking about how they might be able to game the system, with one USA Today writer joking that he was going to change his name to Rolex and then see what happens
next.
Yeah, I'm going to be Ferrari next week.
I was going to say Maserati.
When I come back on Monday.
Maserati Gavin.
Yeah, there you go.
I like it.
I'll be waiting for the money to start pouring in.
Wow. I wonder, too, if on the official Alabama roster, if he requested that.
Yeah. I mean, you would think so.
Or
right?
And if the Alabama athletic department was okay with that, knowing you know, what this could lead to.
Yeah.
It does seem like you might just be inventing nicknames for yourselves.
Well,
right? A whole list of guys who have a wrong
opening
name.
Opening up a can of worms now for who's going to call themselves what when they show up to camp, right?
Right.
And it's the dog days of August when sometimes there's no better way to cool off than to immerse yourself in water and try not to move too much. Unfortunately for one Oklahoma man who tried this tactic, he may have been a little too lifeless. The Tulsa Fire Department said in a Twitter post that crews responded when callers reported a body in the river. When responders got there, they launched a boat to investigate, but discovered that the man was very much alive and just lying in the water. A video included in the post shows the man sitting up when firefighters reached him and started checking him for signs of life. This prompted the department to remind citizens that even with the river levels very low, there are still potentially dangerous areas, and that it might be wise to find other ways to stay cool.
Yeah, floating in a river.
Yeah, we have
not always a phrase that makes you think, oh, just a refreshing time during the summer.
Yeah, yeah. Well especially because, again, the river, from what I could tell from the video, the river level was very low, as they said, and he was almost kind of laying almost on a sandbar, right? He wasn't really floating necessarily. He was actually laying down on some earth of some kind, the river bed.
Right.
So, that didn't seem to be even that refreshing because he's not even really covered in water, I guess, really. So, you know, kind of defeats the whole purpose.
Nobody thought to call to the guy and say, hey, you okay?
Yeah,
didn't
notice that there was a boat full of first responders, you know, charging on their way out to him until they got there.
Wow. By the way, I have a better nickname for you.
Oh, okay.
Rather than Ferrari Gavin.
Yeah.
Guinness Gavin.
Oh, there we go.
Right?
Yes.
Let's go. Let's get those six packs rolling in.
Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to those samples at the house.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you, and to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies advisors do. They have the tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro.
Thanks for being with us. Need cash in a pinch? Some ways of raising it can be a lot more expensive than others. NerdWallet has a handful that should be avoided if possible, and what to consider instead. Number one, beware raiding a retirement plan. If you're still employed, you could borrow from your 401k or temporarily halt retirement plan contributions. Number two, don't skip health insurance. If you don't have access to health insurance through work, check the Affordable Care Act exchanges at healthcare.gov. And number three, be aware of high-cost loans like payday loans or car title loans. These alternatives may not be as quick or convenient, but they're often better for your financial health. How about checking out 211.org, a clearinghouse of government and charitable resources? You can also ask a lender about forbearance and other hardship options. And if you have a credit card, maybe consider a cash advance. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Texas Supreme Court has denied a petition from Governor Greg Abbott and Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton that aimed to reinstate a ban on mask mandates in schools. The decision, which is temporary, comes amid a bitter battle between Abbott and local leaders over control of school masking policy. Meanwhile, a Florida judge refused to dismiss a lawsuit challenging the order by Governor Ron DeSantis that parents should decide whether their children wear masks at school. That order clears the way for a hearing next week on whether to block enforcement of the governor's order.
Number two.
Farther west, Governor Kate Brown announced Oregon is expanding the COVID vaccine requirement to include school personnel.
I've directed the Oregon Health Authority to issue a rule requiring all teachers, educators, support staff, and volunteers in K-12 schools to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19.
Hospitals across the state are near capacity and some have no available intensive care unit beds.
Number three.
The Biden administration says it will automatically erase student loan debt for more than 300,000 people with severe disabilities that leave them unable to earn significant incomes. The move will wipe out more than $5.8 billion in debt and marks the start of a broader overhaul of a program that has been criticized for having overly burdensome rules. The student debt relief is for people who are totally and permanently disabled and have limited incomes. A standoff in Texas over new voting restrictions, a gridlock the state capitol for 38 consecutive days ended Thursday when some Democrats who fled to Washington, D.C. dropped their holdout, paving the way for Republicans to resume pushing an elections overhaul. Only three new Democrats showed up yesterday, meaning the vast majority of the more than 50 Democrats who bolted for the nation's capitol in July continue to stay away from the Texas capitol. But the Republican House Speaker says enough are there now to achieve a quorum. There's more evidence the pandemic drove a lot of us to drink. Beer, wine, and liquor store sales spiked by nearly $42 billion between March and September 2020, a 20% increase compared with same period in 2019. Because food and drink retail sales decreased by 27% during the same period, researchers suggest this indicates we were drinking more at home to cope with the stress of the pandemic. Also, of course, more people were drinking at home because many bars and restaurants were closed.
Yeah, I couldn't drive the kids anywhere because they didn't have any activities. So I'll have an extra drink in the evening. Yeah. So I went in my house.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
A former flight attendant who lost several colleagues when United Flight 175 was flown into the World Trade Center on 9/11 is honoring his friends on the 20th anniversary of the terrorist attacks by pushing an airline beverage cart from Boston to Ground Zero. Pushing a cart is familiar to 62-year-old Paul Veneto, who spent 30 years as a flight attendant for five different airlines. Flight 175 was his regularly scheduled flight, but September 11th happened to be his day off. He told the Patriot Ledger of Quincy, Massachusetts, that the trek will benefit the 9/11 crew members' families and Power Forward 25, which is a nonprofit that assists people dealing with addiction. He's been practicing by pushing a cart near his home up to 16 miles a day. His journey begins tomorrow. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.